give you all my love. Give me what you deserve.
Tune there from Bumblebee Slim. That was entitled You Don't Mean Me No Good, recorded 1935. There and on a disc called Baby So Long from Bumblebee Slim. Plus we heard from Josh White, recordings made in the early 30s. There he was with Low Cotton from Josh White. All right, time for one last track here on this hour of the Deep Blues Hour. We're going to hear from Catfish Keith. This is from his release called A True Friend Is Hard to Find. It's a gospel retrospective that he put out on his own record label. Here's Catfish Keith and One Kind Favor on the Deep Blues Hour.
Favor I'll ask of you. One kind favor I'll ask of you. One kind favor and I'll ask of you. See that my grave is kept clean. Hear that church bell toll? Ever hear that church bell toll? Ever hear that church bell toll? Another poor boy's dead and gone. Got no wind. Lonely lane ain't got no wind. Lonely lane ain't got no wind. Coming down with your long lost friend. Long lost friend. Coughing sound. Did you ever hear that coughing sound? never hear that coffin sound. Another poor boy's dead and gone.
RCT in sound from way out.
Welcome to the David Pakman Show. I'm Farron Cousins. I've been sitting in for David Pakman this week, and we have a lot to cover today, so let's go ahead and jump right in. Obviously, one of the biggest things happening right now in the country that's not named Joe Manchin is the Omicron variant. According to the new numbers, the Omicron variant now makes up 73% of new COVID cases. And of course, with holiday travel happening right now, these are the numbers from last Friday. Holiday travel is happening, holiday this weekend, we can expect those numbers to climb even higher. And that is why, of course, on Tuesday, President Joe Biden, once again, just like he did in September, came out and addressed the nation to both soothe our fears and remind us that we can protect ourselves, at least to a certain degree, from this virus. He, just like in September again, reiterated that this is becoming a pandemic of the unvaccinated. And at this point, not getting a booster shot is also kind of seen as not being fully vaccinated. We are seeing a drop-off in efficacy. So if you got your vaccine, your first two doses, February, March of this year, depending on the vaccine, it could be down to roughly a 40% efficacy compared to where it was several months ago if you do not get vaccinated. You're still offered some protection from it, obviously. It does, of course, reduce risk of hospitalization and death, but that is why those booster shots are so important. These vaccines do not last forever. This mRNA vaccine is not a forever thing. And booster shots may be something that we have to live with for the foreseeable future. And the Biden administration is also saying we're going to get tests out to American citizens, 500 million tests they're pledging. So that is a step forward. And of course, that is due to pressure. It was only, two weeks ago when Jen Psaki, during a press conference, you know, kind of dismissed the idea of giving the public free COVID tests. And now suddenly it's a reality after everybody pushed back on that issue. So the administration is responding to pressure. Also worth noting, but off topic, the fact that now they're even considering extending the student loan debt repayments, pushing that back further down the road. Again, this is due to public pressure. But it all underscores, obviously, the bigger point here. Omicron is running rampant here in the United States. Whereas a handful of weeks ago, we had one case out in California, one case in Minnesota. Now it's 73.2% of all new cases. And of course, that number is expected to rise. There's still too much we do not know about Omicron. So again, the best advice, and this is what Biden is telling us, is be safe. We don't have to go into a panic, he told us. We're not going back to lockdowns, which I don't know. Maybe that is something we should discuss here in America. We never really had real lockdowns anyway. Let's be honest about it. We had 50 different states doing 50 different things because our federal government, then run by the Trump administration, didn't want to do anything. So that's why we got pummeled with COVID in the first year. And then, of course, by the time Biden came back, everything was reopened. He didn't want to send us back to lockdowns, and he still refuses to do that. So I don't think, regardless of how bad it gets, I don't think Biden's going to put us back in that situation anyway, even if we need it. I think he feels, kind of like Trump did, the optics of that in an election year probably aren't going to look too great. So it is what it is. If you're traveling this holiday weekend, protect yourself. If you're going to be around friends, family, any large group of individuals indoors, wear masks if you can. Socially distance when possible. Do what you can to protect yourself, because Omicron does appear, at least right now, to be a little more permeable in the vaccinated. We're not seeing, obviously, as severe of symptoms, but it's still a threat. So please, please, please protect yourselves out there. And part of protecting yourself means protect yourself from the misinformation and, of course, the staggeringly stupid advice coming from the right. Paul Gosar has become one of the latest people on the right to actively encourage people to fight back against COVID protections. In a video that surfaced this week, put out there by Ethan Schmidt, who runs the so-called Anti-Maskers Club. So, you know, right off the bat with the name there, you can tell super serious organization. Got a video of Gosar, and Gosar said this: "Hey, here's to that anti-vaxxer group. Stay the course." And then Schmidt replies, "Yeah, anti-vaxxer club. Stay the course." He's telling the anti-vaxxers, the people who are actively telling the rest of the country to not get the vaccine, stay the course. Omicron is 73% of new cases. Across the country, that graph is once again making another swing. This is, what, the fifth, sixth wave of COVID we are now experiencing. And this Yahoo, who serves in Congress, has a medical degree, is telling people, listen to the anti-vaxxers, don't give up your anti-vax ways. I mean, that's what stay the course means. It means keep doing what you're doing. Keep spreading misinformation, Paul. Is that what you want them to be doing? Because the statistics also show that not only is COVID rising, but it's rising faster in areas that voted for Donald Trump, which means it's rising faster among Republicans. We also know that far more Republicans are unvaccinated than Democrats. To put it another way, you're killing your base. As I mentioned earlier on this week's program, being a Republican is basically a comorbidity with COVID at this point. And their own lawmakers, members of their own party, are actively telling them, keep it up, keep doing it. You're killing them. You're actively killing them. Much like Sarah Palin suggested, you know, at the Turning Point USA conference, you know, oh, you keep fighting back. We don't need the shot. I'll get the shot over my dead body, Sarah Palin says. Encouraging others to not do the bare minimum to protect themselves. And at some point, if people like Gosar and Palin, of course, continue saying these things, we're going to have a real conversation ahead of the midterms about what the mortality rate of COVID has done to the American electorate. And I know that's a rather morbid conversation that a lot of people are avoiding, but that's something we do have to talk about. Because again, for months now, this has been primarily a Republican-centric disease. Only about 10% of Democrats, self-identified Democrats, say they're not vaccinated. Almost 40% of Republicans say they're not. And we're almost seeing the same kind of ratio in the death totals for COVID. They're actively killing their base. They're giving them this horrendous advice that is killing them. So how is that going to play out in the midterms? It is going to have an impact. So again, that's a tough conversation. It's certainly an unpleasant conversation, but it's one that we're going to have in the coming year. And maybe we need to have the conversation sooner. Look, I'm obviously on the left, right? I have my politics on the left. But that doesn't mean that I want to see anyone on the right die from this virus. I don't want to see any human being die from this virus again. If I could stop it right now, if we had a magic wand, I would do it. I wouldn't hesitate. Even, you know, we have to put the politics aside. But in order to do that, we have to be able to convince the people on the other side that they have to care about this, that they have to take care of themselves. So maybe it is time to have those conversations about Republicans killing off their base and what that's going to do to their election chances. Because I guarantee you, if they look at those voting rolls and see that they've lost enough voters that could have swung an election in previous years, they're going to change their tune. They're suddenly going to realize, oh, wait a minute, you know what? Maybe masks are good. Maybe people ought to get vaccinated. So it is time for those conversations, if for no other reason than to scare Republican politicians into finally doing the right thing and encouraging their base to protect themselves. And another thing that needs protecting is apparently Dr. Anthony Fauci. Jesse Waters, Fox News host, came out recently and said the following. This is at the Turning Point USA conference. Again, this is, you know, where all the wackos love to go. So he said this. This is where you say, Dr. Fauci, you funded risky research at a sloppy Chinese lab, the same lab that sprung this pandemic on the world. That's not true. You know what? People don't trust you. You know what? People don't trust you, don't you? Okay, maybe that's a typo. Boom! He is dead. He is dead. He's done. You do that. 30 seconds. It's all you need. Get us that. That's what we want. That changes the whole conversation of the country. Now, Waters was suggesting that people, as he put it, ambush Dr. Fauci if they ever see him in public. But the boom, he is dead, he is dead, he's done. Get us that. That's what we want. To me, to my ears, that sounds like a death threat. That sounds like a Fox News host calling for his supporters to possibly kill Dr. Anthony Fauci. And of course, to somebody like Fauci, that's also apparently how it sounded, because Fauci has now said this guy should have been fired on the spot. Fox News, as of this show, has not released a comment about Jesse Waters' statement here. And of course, there's other ways to interpret that. If you were actually going to try to convict him on this, you wouldn't win that case. And here's why. Because dead can actually have multiple meanings. He's dead. Could mean his career is dead. Could mean his argument is dead. He was vague enough with what he said to not get prosecuted for it. But that doesn't excuse it. And here's the thing. Fauci also pointed this out in his response where he said Waters should be fired on the spot. He said, they're not so much mad at me and fighting against me as they're fighting against science. Because that is what is happening right now. These Republicans are fighting against science. Because science is against them, apparently. But that's a position that they took. They decided to make science their enemy. They decided to make science the antithesis of what they stand for. They didn't have to do that. This was a conscious effort made by the Republican Party that has spanned several decades now. You know, they're on the wrong side of science on the issue of climate change. They're on the wrong side of science, you know, social sciences, when it comes to things like trickle-down theory, when it comes to helping the poor. And of course, with the pandemic itself as well. They're always on the opposite side of this. And that is what they're mad at. But most importantly, they know how badly Republicans have screwed this up. So Fauci has become their punching bag and their fall guy, so they can blame him instead of acknowledging all of their failures over the past 2 years. I'm Farron Cousins, in for David Pakman. You can find me on social media, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Farron Balanced, and of course, youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. We'll be right back with more. Welcome back to the David Pakman Show. I am Farron Cousins, sitting in for David Pakman. You can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/FarronBalanced and youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. And of course, every week I host the Ring of Fire podcast. Go to rofpodcast.com. Well, we've got more COVID news to talk about. And it actually calls back to a story we talked about yesterday. As you'll recall, we showed the clip of Donald Trump and Bill O'Reilly, their little rewrite history tour, where Donald Trump sheepishly admitted that he had, in fact, gotten the COVID booster. The crowd booed him. They did not want to hear that. And then Bill O'Reilly, this week, does an interview with Dan Abrams on News Nation. And O'Reilly admits to Abrams that he had to console Trump after that crowd booed him. After the event, of course, they weren't on stage when the, you know, make him feel better part took place. So here's what O'Reilly said. I told him that today. He called me. He was hurt by their reaction. I said, this is good for you. This is good that people see another side of you, not a political side. You told the truth. You believe in the vax. Your administration did it. And you should take credit for it because it did save, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of lives. So I'm just picturing this scenario in my head, right? Because this wasn't even like backstage after the event that O'Reilly had to go up to him and be like, hey, bud, you okay? No, this was like the next day, Trump calls him, and O'Reilly's probably like, oh, God. Yeah, hello.
I'm still so sad. They were so mean to me.
Yeah, bud. Listen, hey, sometimes it's okay. Sometimes it happens. Now, listen, as I said yesterday, I'm actually okay with Donald Trump claiming he created the vaccines, whatever it takes to get these people vaccinated at this point, right? But at the same time, you did this. I mean, you were the only one who didn't appear in that, you know, PSA with some of the other former presidents who encouraged people to get vaccinated. You've openly expressed your disdain for wearing masks. Like, you're literally encouraging your followers to not protect themselves. Even in your little diatribe that we talked about, you still said, if you don't want to get it, don't get it. No mandates, no mandates. You're driving them to this. So you don't get to be upset when your little Frankenstein's monster turns on its creator. And that is exactly what happened here. The Q people out there, they're now confused and a little angry because they don't know how to feel about Trump because suddenly he's promoting the vaccine. So rest assured, we're going to end up with a new conspiracy theory in the next couple days as to why Trump really claimed to have been boosted. So I guarantee you that's on the horizon. So be on the lookout for that. But again, you made this possible by downplaying the pandemic, by suggesting it was overblown, by repeatedly telling us last year that, oh, it's going to be gone soon. Oh, everything's going to be fine. And then, of course, not encouraging people to get vaccinated, hiding your own vaccination status from people. That drives them to these horrible, horrible decisions and, of course, contributed to their anti-vax ideology. Believe it or not, that was not even the weirdest thing that O'Reilly said during that interview with Dan Abrams. He goes on to say, I'm trying to tell President Trump, run on your record. He's going to run again, all right. So Bill O'Reilly, who clearly is in close contact with Donald Trump, has spent several weeks with him, has spent other time with him throughout this year, tells us that without a doubt, Donald Trump is running for president in 2024. So that's something we also have to deal with, something that also has to be addressed. But to his statement, run on your record. What record is that? 400,000 dead Americans in a pandemic that you pretended wasn't a big deal? A trade war with China that you had no idea what the end goal was? You just started it because you were, I don't know, feeling a little weird that day? Or is it your border wall that's sitting down there, literally falling apart, washing away, and rusting? So those are about the only three things. Oh, I'm sorry, tax cuts. You also cut taxes for the wealthy and screwed over working class people by taking away some of our deductions. What else? I mean, for real, what else was Donald Trump's record here? So, Bill, when you tell him, run on your record, you got to be a little more specific than that, because there's only a handful of things the guy did, and all of them are bad, right? There's no good thing when you look at it from a purely nonpartisan political analysis. What good thing happened during the Trump administration? Are there truly any people in this country who can look at that and say, oh, my life is better off today at the end of his administration than it was at the beginning? He did something that made me better. Of course, the top 10% of income earners, sure, they can say that 100%. But the rest of the country, no, we can't say that. There was either no change or it got worse. And of course, with the pandemic, it got worse for everybody except the billionaires. So I don't know that encouraging him to run on his record is the smartest thing. Unless, of course, you want him to lose, which I do. So yes, please run on your record and remind people how horrible those 4 years were. Now, some people are probably thinking, no, Farron, he did have an accomplishment. He packed the courts with Republican hacks. And I'm going to counter you on that and say that was not necessarily Trump. That was Mitch McConnell. That would have happened under any Republican president. Mitch McConnell would have made that happen. So no, I do not count that as a Trump thing. I count that as a McConnell thing. And I know Trump would probably be furious to hear people say that. But hey, that's the reality under which we live today. Believe it or not, though, there's even more stupidity out there. This time coming from not the former people at Fox News like Bill O'Reilly, but the current people. On Fox and Friends on Tuesday, Carly Shimkus decided to offer one of the most idiotic takes on why people should not get the COVID vaccine. She said this, and this was actually, they were talking about the clip of Trump and O'Reilly, because apparently, you know, slow news week, it's one of the biggest things. So she said this: good for him. Everybody should have the option to make up their own mind about this. About 74-75% of Americans are at least partially vaccinated. That's a high number. If you look at the reality of the situation, if somebody isn't vaccinated right now and they look at their two friends who between the three of them had six shots against COVID and they still got it because of Omicron, realistically, that person isn't going to get vaccinated. So she's telling people that because you can still get these breakthrough infections, which yes, they're becoming more common, that you just shouldn't get vaccinated. Right? Oh, well, they're vaccinated and they still got it. So why would I bother getting vaccinated? Well, I don't know. Maybe because those three people aren't dead. And here's the thing. We're seeing more breakthrough infections right now because, as I mentioned earlier in this program, the efficacy of the vaccines does deteriorate over time. And unfortunately, what we're seeing with these COVID-19 vaccines, the deterioration is taking place over the course of about 6 to 9 months, you know, relatively quickly. I mean, that's about the half-life that we're seeing off of these vaccines. So let me read. I compiled a bunch of statistics here. So let me read this just to counter her point that you shouldn't get vaccinated if you're going to get sick anyway. One large ongoing study of 780,000 veterans shows all three vaccines being used in the U.S. provide strong protection against death from COVID-19, even as their efficacy against mild and asymptomatic infection fell off dramatically. Researchers looking at men and women getting treatment at Veterans Health Administration facilities found that overall vaccine efficacy against all types of infection fell from 87.9% in February to 48% in October. They only counted fully vaccinated veterans, and these were done via PCR tests. Unvaccinated patients, this is from November, accounted for 91% of COVID-19 deaths and nearly 94% of those with a combined need for ventilators or death. That's according to the Journal of American of the American Medical Association, again from just last month. So, does the vaccine prevent you from getting sick? Does it prevent you from having a breakthrough infection? Not necessarily. You are still capable of getting sick, even if you've been vaccinated and boosted at this point. Does it reduce your chances of getting sick? Heck yeah. Does it reduce your chances of dying from COVID-19 or even being put on a ventilator? Oh, double heck yeah. That's what these numbers tell us. 91% of deaths are unvaccinated. 94% of deaths / people on ventilators, unvaccinated. So if getting these shots knocks you down into a less than 10% chance of being one of the people who die from this disease, would you not take that? Would you not accept that risk when you know what's waiting on the other side? And that is the part that people like Carly Shemkis conveniently leave out of their arguments. You know, oh, well, people can still get sick. Sure, they can still get sick. You can still get the flu even if you've had a flu shot. But you're less likely to get it as severe if you've had the vaccine. And it's the same thing with COVID. What we're trying to do at the moment, in addition to slow the spread, which, let's face it, as a country, we're really, really bad at that. We're trying to prevent more death. We're trying to prevent long-term injury. You know, the long haulers, they call them. I have some in my family that had COVID months ago. They still can't even climb a flight of stairs without getting winded and having to sit down. We don't know yet how severely this virus is going to continue to impact people year after year. And I'm not just talking about new waves and new infections. I'm talking about the people who had the severe cases. And in the case of my family, they didn't end up on ventilators. Luckily, they didn't get that far. So this was just hospitalization from a severe case that didn't quite get as severe as some others. And this story is not unique. New Orleans Saints coach Sean Payton, it took him over 2 months to get over his COVID infection in the early part of last year. And of course, he recently was re-diagnosed with COVID again. But we're seeing these long haulers, the people with these long-term issues, and we don't even have enough time yet under our belts to fully understand how bad it is going to affect these people. Is it going to wear off in about a year, the effects of this, they'll be back to normal? Or is this going to be a persistent problem that opens them up to other breathing complications in the future, other lung ailments? We don't know yet. So for all those people out there who say, oh, well, we don't know what's in the vaccines. You don't know what's in Mountain Dew either, but you have no problem guzzling that down. But more importantly, you don't know what the long-term effects of COVID are going to be on your body. And I think it's a heck of a lot safer to trust these vaccines than to trust that this virus isn't either going to kill you or permanently damage your lungs to where your life is forever altered. I think that's a pretty easy gamble to take on the vaccines. I am Farron Cousins, in for David Pakman. You can find me on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Farron Balanced. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the David Pakman Show. I am Farron Cousins, sitting in for David Pakman this week. We do have to talk about Joe Manchin. I know we've talked about him every day this week, but obviously, as the week has progressed, more and more stuff has happened. And one of those things happens to be actress Bette Midler. Now, what happened with the Bette Midler, you're asking? Well, if you've been on social media, I'm sure you've seen it. Bette Midler, and I guess you would call it a fit of anger about Joe Manchin, tanking Build Back Better, sent out a tweet that she later apologized for. So here's the original tweet. What Joe Manchin, who represents a population smaller than Brooklyn, has done to the rest of America, who wants to move forward, not backward, like his state, is horrible. He sold us out. He wants us all to be just like his state, West Virginia, poor, illiterate, and strung out. And dang it, if you hadn't added that last sentence probably would have been okay. But obviously, it's not fair to attack an entire state in this country, all the citizens of it, for the actions of the man they continue to send to the Senate. You know what? I kind of understand it. I truly do. And, of course, as I mentioned, Midler then came out, apologized for it. Here's her apology tweet. I apologize to the good people of West Virginia for my outburst. I'm just seeing red. Joe Manchin and his whole family are a criminal enterprise. Is he really the best West Virginia has to offer its own citizens? Surely there's someone there who has the state's interests at heart, not his own. Good enough apology, right? I'm okay with that. In fact, to be honest, I'm not even mad at Bette Midler for the original tweet. And that may get me some hate. I understand. It's not something I would have said in my younger years. Actually, I probably would have said something like that. But no, was it fair? Probably not. And of course, some of the things she said actually weren't even that accurate. Illiterate? No. West Virginia is actually 16th lowest literacy rate in the country. The top four states are California, New York, Florida, and Texas. Because the larger the population, the larger the likelihood that you have more illiterate citizens. So West Virginia is not even in the top 10 in most illiterate states. So that was a low blow that was also factually inaccurate. The other points, though, poverty, they got the sixth highest poverty rate in the country. 31st in unemployment, so not too bad, right? They got a 6.3 unemployment rate based on the numbers I saw. So well above the national average, but of course, certainly not at the top, not at the bottom, just kind of right there in the middle. One area, however, is what should scare the hell out of West Virginians. And this is something, especially with the environmental provisions from Build Back Better, that needs to be hit on repeatedly. The cancer rate in West Virginia is the 48th highest in the nation. The highest, of course, being Kentucky. But that cancer rate is due partially to the industrial pollution. It's due to the coal mining operations in West Virginia. But the industrial pollution in West Virginia is well documented. I happen to work with Mike Papantonio, who has handled multiple environmental lawsuits in West Virginia, where people left and right have been poisoned by mega corporations for decades. And the poisons, the toxins they've dumped into these rivers and streams and into the environment itself is still causing cancer to this day. That hasn't gone away. And as long as people like Joe Manchin fight back against environmental protections, you're going to continue to see these very high cancer rates. So those are the kinds of things, really, that Bette Midler should have hit upon. Of course, I understand she didn't have time. She's not a political researcher. She's not involved in political media in any way. So she spoke from the heart. And sometimes when you do that, you say things that you really ought not say. And of course, you loop in and blame people and basically make fun of them for things that aren't true, and it's not fair. The people of West Virginia absolutely deserve better than Joe Manchin. But at the end of the day, they keep sending him back to the Senate. You know, just like the people of Kentucky deserve better than Rand Paul and Mitch McConnell, yet Mitch McConnell's been sent back to the Senate since I was 2 years old. Rand Paul, not quite as long, but if he stays in politics, I promise you he will be. It's just the nature of the beast, right? People want to stick with what's comfortable, with what they know, because they aren't afraid that their lives are going to get better. At this point, I think that's never a possibility, or I think they think it's not a possibility. They're just worried their lives could get worse with somebody different. So that's what we have to fix. That's what we have to address with these people, these residents in these areas that keep electing horrible people like Joe Manchin. We need to explain to them that there are better options, that sometimes it's okay to take that risk and vote for somebody you don't know whose name isn't familiar. Joe Manchin, obviously well known throughout West Virginia. more well-known across America today than I'm sure Manchin ever wanted to be. So that's up to us to educate these people, to help them understand that they deserve better and they can have better. Look at it this way. Joe Manchin blocking Build Back Better is, of course, harmful to the very citizens that he represents in West Virginia. But it's harmful to the entire United States as well. Goldman Sachs came out, they revised their economic outlook for the year 2022, had to revise it down based on Joe Manchin's statement. They've also told us that killing this bill is going to starve the United States economy next year of $60 billion. $60 billion. First quarter GDP growth for next year was revised down from 3% to 2%, a full percentage point. In terms of GDP, that's a relatively big deal for one man's vote on one piece of legislation. That's how powerful he is. He shouldn't be. There's absolutely no reason Joe Manchin should have this power. And that, of course, is what sets people like Bette Midler off. It sets all of us off. So, while I don't agree necessarily with how she said what she said, I do understand it to a degree. And, of course, she did apologize. So I have no problem with this. She did a good job there. But we shouldn't focus on, oh, she screwed up. No. We should focus on the anger that she has and understand that that is not limited to Bette Midler. We're all angry. Every one of us. But we need to turn that anger into action. We need to turn the anger into education. We need to help people understand. Because look, I'm in Florida. I don't get to vote for Joe Manchin. I will never vote for Joe Manchin ever in my life, even if I did live in West Virginia. But it's still up to us to let people know you deserve better and you can have better. You just have to take that gamble on a name that's not familiar to you. And trust me, folks, that is so hard to convince people to do. But the country may not have much of a choice. So we have to. And Democrats came out after, of course, all the spotlight's been on Joe Manchin this week and said, we're going to play hardball with him next year. Yep. Joe Biden, President Joe Biden, says he is not done with his talks with Joe Manchin. This isn't over. They're going to continue on with this. Chuck Schumer says we're going to play hardball with Joe Manchin. We're going to make this thing happen. And they're going to start putting pressure on him. And that's what's been needed this whole time. I want everybody to think for a second. In terms of in the Senate, who are the people you have seen publicly come out and call out Joe Manchin who are sitting in the Senate today? Well, not today. They're on vacation. But you know what I mean. Who? Chuck Schumer has. Bernie Sanders has. Pretty sure Elizabeth Warren has. It's three out of 50 that I know of. Now, that's not to say they're the only three. Sure, plenty of other folks could have flown under the radar. Maybe their statements, their comments didn't quite get the attention that the comments of these other folks had. But why? I mean, Bernie Sanders made headlines for a day and a half last week by saying Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema were acting like Republicans. But part of the pressure campaign that has to be put on Joe Manchin, the hardball the Democrats say they're going to play, means that it can't just be Bernie Sanders. They can't just send Bernie out to be the attack dog and then later on be like, well, he's not really a Democrat, so that's why he can do it. No. Bernie Sanders is more of a Democrat than Joe Manchin could ever hope to be in his life. Trust me. In fact, he's more of a Democrat than any of the Democrats in that Senate. But either way, you can't just have one guy. You can't have three people. Elizabeth Warren is tough. She is absolutely just an attack person. and a passionate person, and I love Elizabeth Warren. But that's also not enough. There has to be this united front, and that's what the Democratic Party has been lacking. You know, sure, you're not going to get Sinema to join in on the attacks on Joe Manchin to really pressure him. You're not going to get Tester to do it either. But you can get a handful, you know, 10 to 15 other Democratic senators to band together and go public with this. And that's what you have to do. It can't just be one guy doing an interview here, or Elizabeth Warren doing an interview over here, and, you know, making passing comments about Joe Manchin and both of them, and then the interviewer moves on to something else. That's not good enough. It has to be press conferences. It has to be meetings. And then after the meetings, you have to do another press conference and talk about how he wouldn't go along with what you needed and how much that's going to harm the people of the United States. Those are the points you hit on. You don't just talk about, oh, everybody's going to suffer by this. No, say, listen, because of this man obstructing this legislation, you don't get that child tax credit money in your bank every month anymore. Because of his decision here, we're not going to have childcare expenses paid for you. We're not going to have lower cost prescription drugs. We're not going to have the $35 insulin that's a part of the legislation. We're not going to transition to renewable energy. We're going to keep burning the dirty fossil fuels. That's the message you go forward with, but you have to go forward with it with as united of a front as you can put together. It can't be a piecemeal patchwork of one senator over here on MSNBC saying it, one on CNN saying it, and then nobody talks about it for another month. No. And you can't put it all on Joe Biden either. It can't just be Manchin and Biden talking again. No. It has to be everybody, everywhere, every time, all the time, going after him and playing hardball. So again, the Democrats say they're going to play hardball with Joe Manchin in 2022, and I am here for it all day long. But you have to do it right. You can't just come across as a bunch of bullies who are mad at Manchin. Put the real pressure on him, remind the public of what's at stake, and eventually, if you're united and strong, you might just be able to crack him. I'm Farron Cousins. You can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/farronbalanced, youtube.com/TheRingOfFire, and Ring of Fire Podcast at rofpodcast.com. I'll be right back with more on The David Pakman Show. Welcome back to The David Pakman Show. I am Farron Cousins, sitting in for David Pakman today. And hey, don't forget, you can find me on all my social media accounts, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Same name on all of them, at Farron Balanced. That is also the name of my personal YouTube channel. And of course, you can find me at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. Let's talk about the January 6th Select Committee to round out this day's show, right? After all, it now appears they're going after sitting Republican members of Congress. They submitted a request this week to Republican Congressman Scott Perry. And Perry made headlines recently when it was revealed that he was one of the, I guess you'd call it a ringleader, of some of the other House Republicans who were working to get the DOJ to intervene and overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election. Scott was kind of the ringleader. And now Mr. Perry, after the committee said, we would like some documents from you, and of course we would like for you to sit down and have a chat with us, has announced that no, not going to do it. Because he says the committee is somehow illegitimate and unconstitutional. Let me read this statement that Perry put out on Tuesday after deciding he was not going to work with the committee. I stand with immense respect for our Constitution, the rule of law, and the Americans I represent who know that this entity is illegitimate and not duly constituted under the rules of the U.S. House of Representatives. I decline this entity's request and will continue to fight the failures of the radical left who desperately seek distraction from their abject failures of crushing inflation, a humiliating surrender in Afghanistan, and the horrendous crisis they created at our border. Sometimes, folks, sometimes, there's so much stupid in one statement that it hurts. It hurts us to read these things. It's painful to have those words come out of my mouth, even if they're not from me, they're from him. I don't like that at all. So, let's address a couple things real quick here from Mr. Perry. You're calling the Democrats losers? You're saying they can't get over something? Dude, the reason they want to talk to you in the first place is because you tried to overturn the election. You tried to weaponize the Department of Justice to do your bidding, and illegally, unconstitutionally, by the way, since you seem to love the Constitution, overturn the duly elected government of the United States at the time, so you don't get to lecture anyone about what is and is not constitutional. And of course, yes, the Select Committee is 100% constitutional. That was actually something I had discussed in yesterday's program as well, you know, with Alex Jones' lawsuit saying the committee's not constitutional. No, it is. Courts have ruled over the years, yes, the House of Representatives does in fact have this authority, going all the way back to the first, basically criminal inquiry, I guess you could call it, that the House conducted all the way back in 1795. So, learn your history, Scott Perry. Learn your Supreme Court cases, Congressman Perry, so that you won't make such a damn fool of yourself in the future. But it is what it is, right? Mr. Perry's doing what he knows. He's worried. He's panicked. He understands that the text messages that have already come out from him are really, really bad. And the committee is doing what they should be doing and now officially focusing on these members of Congress. The problem that I have with them going after these members of Congress, because let's not forget Jim Jordan is also involved in this, Gohmert, Brooks, all of these people do need to be investigated. They do need to be called in front of the committee, but that's not enough. Heck, we also need to find out why Lauren Boebert was, you know, live tweeting Nancy Pelosi's location during all of this. She'd only been a member of Congress for, at that point, really a matter of hours. So why was she doing that? So that also needs to be brought up in front of the committee. The problem I have is that that's not good enough. Just bringing these people in front of the committee, getting your hands on these records, you know, their call logs, text messages, whatever it is, and getting their testimony. We've seen a lot of this already. The problem is, even if you get horrible information on any of these individuals, the most you can do is recommend criminal charges for them. You're not going to vote to expel them. And even if you attempted to vote to expel them, you wouldn't have the votes to do it. That's what drives me crazy about all of this. Because these members of Congress do need to be expelled. It is time for that. Yes, we can go through due process. We'll make sure it's all fair and neat, and, you know, cross our T's, dot our I's, all of that. But if you ask me personally right now, I think these people need to be expelled. I think their actions, based on the text messages that, again, are already readily available, I think they rise to sedition. I think they rise to treason. We are talking about elected members of Congress trying to convince the Department of Justice to overturn what effectively was the government elect of the United States. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it, really, when you look at it that way. That would constitute treason. Even trying to tell them to do these things would likely rise to the level of sedition. So how are these people still serving in Congress? And the answer is the Republicans. If the Democrats had the numbers, I would like to think they would go ahead and vote to expel these members. Right? I'd like to think that. Heaven only knows sometimes what the Democrats are actually going to do. But without those Republican numbers, it's not going to happen. Without enough Republicans standing up and saying, this person is so toxic, not just to my party, but to the country itself, and I believe that their behavior does rise to the level of criminal activity, and I want them gone. Without enough Republicans to say that, it's not going to happen. And then, of course, maybe we get charges referred from this, and then maybe these people get prosecuted, and maybe they get convicted. At this point, we're talking about 4 or 5 years out into the future, probably, at that point. You know, they can serve another, what, 2.5 terms in the amount of time that may take. Think of the damage that these individuals could do in that time. It's not good enough. Letting them sit there while this happens is not good enough. At the very least, we need some kind of mechanism to where they could at least be suspended. And I know there is currently no mechanism like that in the House. Maybe that's something we work on. Maybe that's an amendment to the Constitution. Maybe we throw that in with the term limit amendment that I also feel we desperately need. But until this matter is settled, until these people cooperate and turn over everything and the committee finishes its work and issues its final report, these individuals should have their votes suspended. They should be stripped of their committees immediately. And that should be that. That's what we should do. But again, there's no constitutional mechanism for that to happen. So we need an amendment to give Congress the authority to do that, I believe. I don't think they could just change their own rules to do that. So that's what needs to happen. But let me tell you something else, the most important thing that needs to happen. And this is the final thing I want to talk about on today's show, today's main show. And that is that I think this January 6th Select Committee, the Riot Committee, whatever you want to call it, they're now in over their heads. I do not think this committee, as it is right now, should be the lead investigatory body into the Capitol riot. I believe that it is time for Merrick Garland to finally step up and appoint a special prosecutor to officially start a criminal investigation into these events. Now, don't get me wrong. So far, for the most part, I have been very happy with what the Select Committee has done. And the reason I say they're in over their heads is because of the sheer scope of what it is they're trying to do, which, to be honest, we don't even really know everything they're attempting to do yet. So, you know, we have to contend with that. You know, they've got Trump out there. They say, oh, we may be looking at criminal activity here. We may be looking at criminal activity with these individuals. We got Roger Stone. We got Steve Bannon. Now we got members of Congress. And they can't, even if they're from opposing parties, heck, almost especially if they're from opposing parties, they now really can't do this in a nonpartisan way. Because you do have lawmakers that do have to answer these questions. They absolutely have to. That's why a special prosecutor is now needed. Convene a grand jury and essentially take it over for the most part. Because the optics are always going to be bad if you have a Democrat-controlled committee subpoenaing Republican members of Congress. Republicans are going to weaponize that to show that, oh, the whole thing is a partisan sham. Look, they're going after our lawmakers because this is so ridiculous, even though there's legitimate reason to go after them. A special prosecutor could avoid that to a degree. They're still going to claim it's partisan witch hunt. But the bigger problem is the longevity of this committee. This committee is not going to be able to wrap up this investigation by the midterms. They're just not. And if they do wrap up before then they've cut corners in a lot of places, and it's not a complete investigation. Special prosecutor avoids that problem. Because what happens when Republicans win back the House, if they win back the House? They kill the committee. It's over. They disband it. And what happens if members of the committee don't win re-election? Well, then you're in for a real big problem, too. A special prosecutor appointed by the Attorney General avoids all of those problems. The Republicans wouldn't be able to squash a special prosecutor. We've seen them try, trust me, we have. But they weren't successful with it. So that's what needs to happen now. But 100% of that rests upon the shoulders of Attorney General Merrick Garland, who has apparently just made it clear he's not going to do anything. And for the record, part of the reason why I say that there's no way this committee can even wrap things up by the midterms or even by next January when the new Congress would be sworn in, Steve Bannon doesn't even go on trial for contempt until July. Okay, you're not going to have resolution for that. Mark Meadows hasn't even been arrested yet. So he'll be arrested, arraigned, and then they'll set a trial, which will likely be even further out from July. So you're not going to get the cooperation you need from these people probably until after the election, because if they lose the cases, they're going to appeal. So this committee is doomed from the start because of the way Congress itself is set up. But you avoid those problems. A lot of them disappear completely if the thing is handed over to a special prosecutor or multiple special prosecutors. You know, appoint several. There's really no limit to how many you could appoint to handle each different aspect of that. The rally organizers could be one focus of one prosecutor. The Trump administration could be another. The members of Congress could be another. And then, of course, all the outside players who weren't with the rally, they weren't with the administration or Congress, you know, your Bannons, your Fox News hosts who have been texting with Mark Meadows, all of those other individuals could fall into another one. So there you go. But anyway, listen, we're out of time for today's show. I'm Farron Cousins. Find me on social media at Farron Balanced. We've got a wonderful bonus show coming up for you today, including Roger Stone flip-flopping on what actually caused the Capitol riot. I'm Farron Cousins in for David.
Hello, my fellow Americans. I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
With your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz. Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-song word.
WRCT Pittsburgh. Meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh. Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
How do we get it wrong? Nobody saw it coming. Nobody in the whole world. Who saw it coming?
While President Biden says no one saw the Omicron variant coming, global health advocates have long warned if we don't vaccinate the world, the pandemic will not end. We'll look at why Oxfam has filed a shareholder complaint against Moderna. Then, how the Koch network hijacked the war on COVID.
We traced the dark money behind anti-lockdown and anti-public health narratives. Specifically, we found that the Koch network was actively promoting protests against lockdowns as early as April 2020.
Plus, the Pentagon's issued new rules on stopping white supremacy and other forms of extremism in the military.
The vast majority of men and women in our armed forces, as of course you know, serve honorably. While extremist activity in the force is rare, any instance can have an outsized effect.
And the Kellogg strike has ended with workers declaring victory. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. South African scientists say an explosion of COVID-19 cases around Johannesburg has peaked just 1 month after the fast-spreading Omicron variant was first detected in the region. South Africa's National Institute of Communicable Diseases said Wednesday, Omicron appears less likely to cause hospitalizations and death than other variants. Researchers in Scotland and at Imperial College London announced similar findings. It's not clear whether Omicron is sending fewer people to the hospital because it's less virulent or because many people have partial immunity due to vaccination or a previous infection. Meanwhile, the head of the World Health Organization again warned rich nations against administering booster shots widely until people in poor countries have access to vaccines. WHO Director Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said Wednesday about 20% of the world's vaccine supply is being used for booster shots.
Blanket booster programs are likely to prolong the pandemic rather than ending it, by diverting supply to countries that already have high levels of vaccination coverage, giving the virus more opportunity to spread and mutate.
The U.S. Food and Drug Administration's approved emergency use of the first oral medication against COVID-19. The pill was developed by Pfizer and is marketed as Paxlovid. In a clinical trial, the drug cut the risk of hospitalization or death by nearly 90% in people who received it within 5 days of the onset of symptoms. The drug is in short supply and will initially only be used to treat people 12 and up who are at high risk of severe disease. Meanwhile, U.S. hospitals are warning of shortages of monoclonal antibody treatments. If administered soon after infection, monoclonals can dramatically cut the risk of severe illness or death. But two of the three therapies available in the U.S. appear to be useless against the Omicron variant, with only one, produced by GlaxoSmithKline, able to neutralize the virus. Here in New York, coronavirus infections are skyrocketing ahead of the Christmas holiday. Governor Kathy Hochul announced nearly 29,000 new cases Wednesday, another record daily toll, and a 30% jump from the record set earlier this week. South Carolina Democratic Congressmember Jim Clyburn said Wednesday he's tested positive for coronavirus and is symptomatic. Clyburn is number three Democrat in the House, serving as majority whip. He's 81 years old and reports he's fully vaccinated and received a booster shot in September. Meanwhile, the Supreme Court said Wednesday it will hold an emergency hearing January 7th to